You're listening to the podcast Dogs Go Swiss, your podcast about living and working in Switzerland, especially in the health sector. My name is Martin Werner, and yes, you're right, the today's episode is in a different language. It's in English. Why are we doing that? It's not like to confuse you. Of course, a little bit training the foreign languages is always fine. But the key reason is that we have a British gentleman today as guest. And so we decided it's much better to have him in his native language. Even he speaks very well German. But that's the reason why we're doing it in English today. And if you're saying, oh my goodness, I don't like that at all, it's totally fine. It's a little experiment. I can recommend to shift to the German episodes, which are already online for you. And for all the other folks, stay tuned. It will be another perspective from the eyes of a British gentleman on Switzerland, and not just only a different perspective. Our today's guest is writing books, is writing bestseller books, and writing bestseller books about Switzerland. He's living for many years in Switzerland, and some of the books are, for example, The Expert Guide to Your Life in Switzerland or Swiss Watching. Many of them are translated in other languages like German. And so we have an expert on Switzerland, and I would say welcome, Dikon Veves. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Martin. It's great to be here. And thank you for doing it in English.
In our pre-talk, you said it's very strange. You can go wherever you want in the world, and people have something in mind about Switzerland. Even if they've never been there, even if they just heard about it, but there is a picture from Switzerland all over the world. Where does that come from? And what is this picture looking like?
It is really interesting. Switzerland isn't a big country. It's not even yet 9 million people. And in terms of area, it's quite small. And yet it has this reputation even, or maybe just this picture abroad, much bigger than a similar European country, say Bulgaria or Portugal. And so it was very interesting for me. One of the first bits of research I did when I wrote my first book many years ago was I was in the UK and I stopped people in the street and said, if I say Switzerland, what do you say straight away? One of those word associations. And I stopped 100 people and every single person had an answer, which was amazing to start with because not all of them were British. It was in London. And the answers were what you would expect. It was mountains and chocolate and banks and snow and trains. And so Switzerland has, maybe not on purpose, but it has this image abroad of being somewhere very clean and tidy and beautiful and associated with certain products such as chocolate or money or skis or cheese, of course. What was interesting is that no one gave an answer that was a person. Famous Swiss people don't really exist unless you're a tennis fan. And even he's retired now. And it was all about the place itself or the things it produces. And that's quite unique. Whereas I did the same experiment in Switzerland about Britain. And some of the top answers, this was a few years ago, the Queen, she was still alive, but also David Beckham, the Beatles. It was as much about people as about tea and cricket and rain. And so this image Switzerland has abroad is fascinating because it's much bigger than the country itself, and it's focused on the landscape and the products, not on people.
What do you think, where does that come from? Is it like you said, it's not by intention? Probably not by intention, but does it belongs to the attitude of the Swiss, like to be very proud on the nation, but they are not talking too much about themselves. So they talk about the things they do, the things they produce, but they're not so focused on like, we are so proud and we're doing that and that.
I think it's two things. I think you're right in both senses. One is that Switzerland is unique in Europe. It has been around since 1291. It has never been ruled or governed by one person apart from when Napoleon tried to take it over. So it's always been a country for the people, by the people. And it's always been a republic. It's never had an emperor or a king. It's never had a general or a president who has any power. And so, and for the last few hundred years, it's been neutral. And so that image of this country that's been around for 700 years with a completely unique political system, unique history, sticks out in Europe when you look at the rest of Europe over the last few centuries. And so I think that's one reason why Switzerland has this image of being different, of certainly its neutrality and its ability to stay out of conflict. It's amazing how often Switzerland pops up in James Bond films or war films or whatever, usually in relation to banks or neutrality. But it does have this uniqueness about it that goes outside the borders. And then in terms of the point you rightly made, Swiss people are quite modest. They're not very good at boasting. They're not Americans, and Swiss people would say they're not Germans. They're not very good at saying we're the best at this and best at that, even though many, many useful things have been invented in Switzerland, not least milk chocolate, but also things that we use every day, like tinfoil or electric toothbrushes or cellophane or LSD or absinthe. Normal things that everyone has in their house, all invented in Switzerland, and yet most people don't know they're Swiss because Swiss people and Swiss companies are quite modest. It's why I think Swiss people aren't particularly good on Twitter, as I still call it, because on Twitter you have to sell yourself and shout, and a lot of Swiss people don't like doing that.
Writing a lot of books about Switzerland, living there, traveling a lot, what are the three things you really like about Switzerland and the Swiss people?
The first one is easy, is the trains. The trains, it's a cliche, I know, but I come from Britain, where the trains used to be great, then they were privatized, and now they're terrible. And they're expensive and terrible, whereas at least here they're expensive and really good. So I love the fact that it's not just the trains, it's the whole public transport system. It's the buses and boats and cable cars. Everything is integrated into one timetable so that no matter how many different operators or providers there are, they have to coordinate their timetables. And so you can get off a mainline train onto a local train, and when you get to a village, the bus is normally there waiting to take you to the mountains. And the fact that you can buy one ticket for all of that, for me, is a miracle. Having grown up in Britain, the trains usually run on time, not always. Nothing is perfect in Switzerland, but they usually run on time. Certainly compared to Germany at the moment, they run on time. I noticed, it made me smile, a couple of months ago, the Swiss train company are now looking at stopping German trains on the border because they're running so late, they're ruining the Swiss timetables, because of course, some German trains come across the border to go to Interlaken or Zurich. So the trains is certainly one thing. The second thing for me is just how beautiful the landscape is, but how accessible it is. It's not like in some parts of Britain and some parts of America that it's in national parks, you have to pay to go in and the infrastructure is limited once you're in there. It is, with the exception of the one national park, which is a different concept, completely accessible in the Bernese Oberland or the Zurich Oberland or Graubünden. And so once you get there, you can go hiking for free, you can enjoy the fresh air for free. And that work-life balance is very important to Swiss people, that you work hard, but then you have this amazing playground on your doorstep so that you can ski or hike or go boating or whatever. And it's available to everyone all the time. That's quite an important thing in Switzerland, this sense of community, whether it's to do with leisure or to do with politics or to do with the workplace. It's all about being in it together. And the last thing I think is probably not what you're expecting me to say, is that the Swiss people themselves are very open and friendly once you get to know them. And that's an important section at the end. With people they don't know, they can come across as being quite distant, quite reserved, even a little bit rude sometimes. And that's because there's a very clear distinction in Switzerland between private and public. Once you break through that, and it's not easy, and even living here, it takes time and effort. But once you break through that, it is a different world. And it's almost as if you're stepping through the looking glass and seeing Switzerland as the Swiss people see it. And I always like to say, a friend in Switzerland is a friend for life, not just for Facebook. It means something. And so it takes time to get there. once you do get there, it's really worth it. But sometimes the road there can feel very frustrating.
Do you have some recommendation how I can open the nutshell?
It's a really good question. And sadly, there's no easy answer. I mean, obviously, people listening to this podcast have an advantage that they already speak German. Now, it's not the same German, as I'm sure many people have realized. But when you don't speak any German at all, like I did when I arrived, it all sounds the same. And it's not Polish and French. It is two dialects of German. So that is an advantage, but it can also be a disadvantage. I do realize that because there is a bit of friction between Switzerland and the big canton, as they like to call Germany. So language is important. I think it's important to make an effort to try and understand Schweizerdeutsch and not only presume that everyone will speak Hochdeutsch with you. I think more importantly, it's to try and meet people in a social situation, because a lot of Swiss people do distinguish very clearly between work and home. There's a wonderful concept of societies that a German psychologist, Kurt Lewin, invented in the 1930s. And the typical Swiss society is a coconut, with inside is family and close friends and outside is the rest of the world. And you have to break through that shell. And unfortunately, for a lot of people, when they move here for work, work is automatically outside the shell. Now, I worked 6 years in a bookshop in Bern, and a bookshop is a relatively informal place. And yet it was still quite hard to socialize with my work colleagues. My boss, in 6 years, never once used my first name, never once used do instead of Z. So there is a hierarchy. So if you can break out of that hierarchy by meeting people in a social situation, the Swiss love to join a Verein, a club of some sort. So if you have any sort of hobby, whether it's hiking or stamp collecting or bird watching or paddleboarding, then join a Verein and get to know people in a social situation, and it will be much, much easier, because in the Swiss mindset, you're already well placed to be welcomed at some point inside the shell, and you're not automatically placed outside the shell because you are work. The one that is sort of between the two stools is neighbors. And neighbors, I think it really just depends on luck. I mean, I have really lovely neighbors and also some neighbors who are perfectly friendly, but very polite and keep me at arm's length. And I think that's the same in any country. I lived in London and had one wonderful set of neighbors, one awful set of neighbors. So I think you just have to be lucky there. And if you do find people who are open to new friendships, then make the most of it when they're on your doorstep, literally. And I think the thing to remember as background to all of this is you are coming in from outside. Most Swiss people don't need any new friends. They already have friends of their own, possibly friends from childhood. Many Swiss people don't move around the country a lot. They may commute, but not very far. And so it is up to you to make the effort without trying too hard, without seeming too desperate. But you are the outsider. And this applies to all expats, not just German speakers. There's no reason why your neighbors, your work colleagues, or people you meet at a party should welcome you with open arms just because you think you're interesting. So it is hard. It is probably harder than in other countries, but it is worth the effort.
In our pre-talk, you said it's interesting to see Swiss moving or living abroad. You mentioned, I think, US.
Yeah.
And said, well, if I remember right, it's very difficult for the Swiss to have their own experience living abroad, because then, like in US, you said, well, all people are friendly. They all know you by name and you are welcome to the party. And what happens at the end of the day, and what confuses the Swiss, you have the parallel between the talk, if maybe Germans come in, and then the Swiss in US, they wandering around because the people are friendly at the first beginning, but then not very interested in you after 2 or 3 weeks. Is that right?
Yes. I mean, I've done many events with Swiss expats in the US, but also Australia. It is the opposite problem. So the opposite of the coconut model is the peach model. Very soft outer flesh, very easy to get to know people and become friends with people. But the inner stone is really hard to get to. And so a lot of Swiss people struggle with the fact that people can be friendly, very welcoming. It's like, oh, we're friends straight away. Let's swap phone numbers. And then 3 weeks later, they might meet you in the street and they've forgotten your name already, because it can feel quite superficial. Feels like you're going through the soft flesh and out the other side. And it's hard to know who is actually your friend, because everyone is your friend, but who is someone you would want to spend time with and want to share experiences with? Or are they just being super friendly because everyone's super friendly? And so I think there is no perfect answer in either situation, but the US and Switzerland are probably the two extreme examples of coconut and peach, and other countries fall somewhere in the middle. I like to say Britain is a pineapple, a little bit prickly on the outside, can come across as a bit unfriendly, but it's actually quite easy to break through the skin. So yes, I think if you're coming into Switzerland, you have to be aware that if you are a peach person, you might feel bruised by all the coconuts. If you're a coconut living abroad, you might end up bruising a few egos and bruising a few people because you're not coming across as the friendliest person in the world.
To grasp it together, it has been three answers. The trains, I'm absolutely with you. It's perfect. There's nothing to say about that. Second, the open landscape, accessible landscape for everyone, and the open-minded Swiss. But you said it's the key to open like the box to get inside the key corner of the private person, of the private surrounding, and it needs the effort to do so in every country.
And I think that, and it really is the key to being happy here, because no one's going to be very happy if they're living in a place where they can't make friends and they can't feel comfortable and feel welcome. And it is hard, especially if everyone else knows that maybe you're only here for 3 years, let's say, as a lot of expats have a 3 or 4 year contract maybe. Then in the Swiss mindset, it's like, why am I going to invest all this time and emotional energy in becoming your friend if you're going to leave in 3 years time? I want a friend who's going to be around for, if not the rest of my life, then a bit longer. But I think you just have to accept that if you're here on a short-term contract, and make the most of what you can do in the time you're here. And I think you will find certainly some Swiss people very open, especially if they happen to have lived abroad or if they work in an environment where there are lots of foreigners or they have a foreign partner. And so it is possible. It does take work, but I think it's the key to happiness.
Yeah. I can underline that totally. If we have the three things we really like about Switzerland, we also need to talk about three things you really find. I wouldn't say don't like, but...
Oh, I say you don't as a like. I can say don't like. That's fine.
Which are still strange for you after 18 years. What are these?
So I think I'm still very British after all this time. I am now Swiss as well. I have dual nationality. The fact that the Swiss do not know how to queue at all is really, really frustrating for me as a British person. There is no such thing as a normal queue in Switzerland. It's just a mass of people. And I'm still of a British mindset that if I'm waiting for a bus or a tram, I make a queue of one person at the bus stop. Whereas Swiss people generally, it is every man, woman and child for themselves. So when you're getting off a tram or a train, there's usually people pressing to get in straight away. There's no real desire to let people off first. And the only time you have a proper queue is if you have a ticketing system, like at the post office. And I have learned what I call the Swiss sidestep, is that if people are waiting, especially for a cable car in the mountains, there'll tend to be a mass of people. There's no identifiable queue. You just sort of shimmy around the edge like a lot of Swiss people do, so you get near the front. Because you know, if you miss that cable car, you miss the bus, then you miss the train, and it's a whole hour to wait. And it's very interesting for me. One time, my boyfriend and I, and he is Swiss, went to Gran Canaria on holiday. At the airport to fly home, there was a check-in desk for the flight to Zurich, and it was just this sort of blob of people. And there was a check-in desk for a flight to Manchester, and it was this beautiful queue with spaces for people to walk through with their bags, and it went round at right angles when it got to the end. And my boyfriend looked at our queue and looked at their queue, and he said, "Now I understand." So I think for such a polite society, the lack of queuing, and I have to say old women are the worst. They have very sharp elbows and very big handbags, and they will push you out the way to get on board. So that is one thing I still can't cope with. Another thing is the bureaucracy, the red tape, which every country has. I know that, and Britain has as well. But here it just seems to be redder and bolder and worse. And I think it's because that's why Switzerland works, in that everyone follows the rules, everything runs on time, and you know that because everyone follows the rules, everything will work. And if people say they will reply to you today, they reply to you today. And if you call a plumber and he says he'll be there between 8 and 9 a.m., he's there at 8:05. And so that's why it works. And that's one of the things I love about living here. But it can get frustrating when no one thinks outside the box, or as you say in German, looks over the edge of the plate. And sometimes you just think, just relax a little bit. You don't have to break the rules. You can just bend them a little. It's like a couple of examples. Opening hours are fixed, which is one thing a lot of people find struggle, that shops still close at like 5 o'clock on a Saturday and then don't open again till 9 o'clock on a Monday. What do you do on a Sunday if you can't go shopping? That's a whole different subject. But you would think sometimes, like it was August 1st, national holiday, very hot. We were all down at the bathing ponds in Bern, and they have a restaurant, they have a bar, they make money from all their customers. And it was completely packed, but it was a holiday. And so therefore it shuts early because it's a public holiday. So at 8 o'clock, they make the announcements. The place is closing, everyone leave. All the Swiss got up and started packing their things. And then all the foreigners, it's like, this is ridiculous. It's 37 degrees. We want to stay and have a drink and maybe order some chips and we can make you money. And it's like, no, we had to get up and leave. There was no flexibility at all, even when there was money involved. A second example is when I changed from being a temporary resident on a B visa to becoming a permanent resident on a C visa. But I didn't realize I could do that after 5 years. And I got the notice from my renewal, and I needed a photo, and I needed something from HR because I had a job at the time. I needed lots of different proofs of everything. And I went, took my ticket, waited. You always have to wait. And then got to the desk, and she was stamping everything. And she said, oh, this is great. You've got everything organized, and you speak German. That's so much easier. And then she looked at the date on my application. She said, but you've been here 5 years, and you're an EU citizen, as I was back then, before the disaster that is Brexit. And she said, oh, you can get a C visa automatically because you have a job, blah, blah, blah. So she put it all to one side. She got the application for a C visa, and she said, now I need a photo. I need a HR statement. I said, but it's all there. She said, but that's your old application. And I said, but I haven't moved house in the last 3 minutes, and I haven't changed my job in the last 3 minutes. She said, yes, but that's your old application. I said, but can't I just move them across? She said, no, I need everything new for a new application. And there was that moment I was just like, don't say anything, just leave and come back tomorrow and do it all again, which is what I did. And it's just moments like that is why Switzerland runs perfectly, but it's also why it can be frustrating. The red tape is there for a reason, but sometimes you feel like you're being suffocated in it. I think customer service could be better. And I think it doesn't have to be to American standards, but it can be. They could at least smile. I remember doing a workshop with a local tourist board. I do quite a lot of workshops with Swiss tourism about what foreigners expect when they come here. And I said, really, the first thing they expect is someone to smile and say hello. No matter whether you're going to a shop or a restaurant or a hotel, and I said, just smile and say hello, make people feel welcome. And one hotelier's response was, well, I'm not a social worker. So I think it's a little bit of tunnel vision. So this is my job. This is what I'm going to do. I don't have to be your friend in order to serve you efficiently. And that's fine. And I would prefer efficient service than terrible service. But efficient service with a smile and a bit of friendliness would go a long way, I think, to helping Switzerland's image abroad of being unfriendly. And it's interesting, in expat surveys, Switzerland always does really well on quality of life and work-life balance and transport and scenery and all and levels of pay, but it always does really badly on feeling welcome, friendliness, customer service, things like that. The sort of soft sell rather than the hard sell. And I notice it a lot with customer service here. It could be better. It could be friendlier rather than better.
You said you have the Swiss passport.
Yes, they actually accepted me.
How does that work? Because one thing which is really strange for the Germans in Switzerland is that they all have the local rules. They have a local tax. They have a local laws just concerning the canton, the Bundesland. And like getting citizenship is also quite located to the country or the village
or the
you are living in.
Yes.
Is that something special? Or where does it come from that they really focus on the local level?
Actually, all of Switzerland is focused on the local level. So you pay your income tax based on where you live. And 80% of your income tax goes to the Gemeinde, to the community. A very small portion goes to the federal government, and then a little, slightly bigger portion goes to the canton. But everything is based at community level. And even when you become a citizen, you do not become a Swiss citizen. You become a citizen of your community. And then you can get a Swiss passport. So I am Bernese. And I'm only Swiss once I have a Swiss passport and leave the country. There's a famous saying is you're only Swiss once you're abroad. Because when you're in Switzerland, you're Bernese or you're Ticinese or you're Genovese or whatever. And I think it's partly to do with this sense of community that everything is at a local level. It's also partly to do with the system of direct democracy where things are decided by referendums or initiatives. And those can be federal and a lot of the main ones are, but they can be local. So in Switzerland, you vote every few months on big issues like joining the UN or abolishing the army, but you also vote on local issues like should we build a new swimming pool in Bern or should we change the opening hours for shops in Zurich? And all of that is decided by the people for their own community. And every community has an elected parliament or government who are responsible to the people, and the people can overturn any decision of any level of government, whether it's local, cantonal, or federal. The people can overturn any decision. So it's a system of democracy that is based on power at the bottom, not power at the top. No one person or party is ever in control of anything in Switzerland, whether that's the local government or whether it's the federal government. Everything is about power sharing. Everything is about consensus building and not about confrontation. That's why even though you have the SVP, the Swiss People's Party, is the largest party, they never have control of anything. They always have to work with other parties. And the same goes for the parties on the left. And when it comes to citizenship, that is no different. You have to be accepted by your community in order for you to become a member of that community. And in small communities, that actually takes place as a vote. The citizens gather together in person and they vote in public whether they want you to become Swiss. Now, that obviously includes people who, your friends and neighbors, but it might include the woman down the street who hates you and she gets a vote as well. In larger communities, it's completely not practical for the whole of the voting electorate to meet. And so it's done by proxy, usually by, so in Bern, it's done by the parliament, as is most things, the parliament represents the people. So you have to be accepted by your community, and that can be a tough process. There are many, many famous examples of people being rejected for fairly spurious reasons. It's often overturned by an appeal, but one woman from the Netherlands who was rejected because she campaigned against cowbells, which of course is close to blasphemy in Switzerland to say you don't like cowbells, because she was an animal rights activist and a vegan, and she thought the cows were being turned deaf by the bells. And her community rejected her because of this. It was overturned. She is now Swiss. So there are certain federal minimums. So you have to pass a language test of the language of your community. It's no use if you're a German speaker trying to become Swiss in Geneva. You have to learn French. You have to pass a knowledge of Switzerland test, and you have all sorts of checks, obviously, by police and tax authorities. And you have to have an interview with either with a board of 7 or 9 people or whatever it is from the community, or in the case of a larger city, with a representative who will ask you a lot of questions about your whole life. So my interview was 90 minutes in Schweizerdeutsch, not even in Hochdeutsch. And the first question, having filled in this 30-page form, the first question was, why did you only have 1 year in kindergarten? And I was like, oh, that's going back a long way. I don't really remember much about kindergarten. But of course, the answer is, in Switzerland, it's obligatory for children to have 2 years in kindergarten. And in Britain, it's completely voluntary. And we start much earlier. So I only had 1 year. So other than saying I was four, I don't know what my parents were doing, which is the wrong answer, you give the right answer. And so it can feel a little intrusive, but it is what it is. And you have to be accepted by your community before you can become Swiss.
Key challenge. And totally different in all the local areas. I heard something very special from Kreuzlingen here in Thurgau. They ask a friend of mine, like, as he was taxi driver, about streets in the city. And if you don't know the street, it means you're not familiar with the street. So, and yeah, but yeah, it is as it is.
It is as it is. And you have to know what to expect. So I think the smaller the community, the more they expect you to know about the community. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you live in a larger city, they want you to be able to know about how the city is governed or how it is run, or maybe which communities are neighboring, but actually to know where you recycle oil in Zurich is probably not the most important question you'll get. Whereas if you live in a small village, it might be important. So I think know your enemy when it comes to passing your citizenship test so that they become your friend.
One last question, Daiken. What is the true meaning of Swissness?
Oh, you see, now that's a hard question, because Swissness is a word that the Swiss made up themselves. It sounds English, but it's just not an English word, because if you look in an English dictionary, it will never be there. The nice thing about the word Swissness is that it can mean whatever you want it to mean, because it's a made up word. And for me, I think it means having some responsibility for yourself. It's a very interesting situation in Switzerland that you take responsibility for your actions and for your life. So a couple of examples which always shock foreigners when they first move here. Children go to school unaccompanied from the age of 7. They walk to school typically. There's no such thing as school buses or parents doing a school run in the car. And it's all about teaching children independence and responsibility. And I've met expat parents who have actually been taken into the principal's office in the school and been told off for driving their children to school because they're setting a bad example and emotionally damaging their children. And which is kind of funny, but it's a very Swiss way of doing it. Another example is that there are lots of places where you can go swimming in the lakes and rivers in Switzerland, and it's wonderful. There are no lifeguards on duty. And the Swiss idea is if you don't swim well, then don't go swimming in those places. It's up to you to know when you're putting your life at risk, not up to the state or anyone else to decide that. The same reason, if you get a cup of coffee as a takeaway, it will not have caution, these contents are hot, written on the side, like it does in the States and in Britain. Because again, if you have a hot cup of coffee in your hand, don't put it somewhere that it might cause burns, like in between your legs. So I think it's partly that. Switzerland is a collective. It always has been. It's from the very first 3 cantons to the 26 cantons we have now, not having anyone in charge, being governed by themselves. It is a collective, but it's a collective made up of individuals who are responsible for themselves. You look after your neighbors. There is such thing as a society here, as health insurance shows. It is not America. You also respect your neighbor's privacy. You don't play loud music after 10 o'clock and things like that. So we are individuals, but there is a sense of community. That's one thing I think Swissness means. The other thing I think it means is to, and it's a bit tricky, it's the whole we are European, but we aren't. And we're not members of the EU, but we know we have a relationship. So 75% of our imports and exports are with the European Union. EU citizens can live and work here, and Swiss people can live and work in the EU. All of that is as the result of tortuous negotiations over the years and many referendums. So it's having a goal of what you want. We want to be independent. We don't want to be part of the EU. We don't want Brussels telling us what to do. But we are also pragmatic. We're not going to go down the Brexit route of cutting ourselves off. So how can we live with what we have, even if it's not exactly what we want? And I think that pragmatism, the EU is one example, but there are lots of other examples of finding a consensus which we can live with is a very Swiss attitude. It can be frustrating in the workplace. I remember when I worked at the bookshop, some management meetings would take forever because no one wanted to make a decision. No one wanted to be the one to stand up and said, we have to do this. And everyone would have their say. It's direct democracy in the management room. But it does mean that generally there's a sense of solidarity, I guess, in that decisions are taken collectively. You may not agree with them, but you know there's been a discussion. I think that's why the culture wars that plaguing other countries don't have the same effect here, because partly because no one party can control the narrative, like the Republicans in America and the Tories in Britain are trying to do, but also because people have a discussion, take a vote, and maybe it takes more than one vote, maybe it's two or three votes. But then you realize that a consensus has been reached and you move forward. So the best examples are the social issues that are dividing, especially America, like same-sex marriage or abortion. They are non-issues in Switzerland now, apart from with the very right wing, because the people have voted on them more than once and have said yes. And so abortion is legal. It came rather late. It wasn't until, I think, 2002. But there have been three votes since then, and they've all been in favor of having access to abortion. And so it's kind of off the agenda, apart from if you're on the Christian right wing. And most people accept that, even if they don't agree with the law. And the same with same-sex marriage. It took a long time to get here. It only came into effect a couple of years ago. But now most people accept it because it's been thoroughly debated and thoroughly discussed. And it's not a decision that was taken by a Supreme Court or taken by a parliament and imposed on the people. And I think that, again, is a very pragmatic solution to problems that other countries face. And maybe it wouldn't work in a larger country, but in Switzerland it works. Find a solution that is acceptable to the most people, discuss it, vote on it, take a decision, move on. And I think that, whether it's international politics or domestic politics or social issues, I think that is one of the key factors to Switzerland being stable and successful like it is.
Yeah, I would say sometimes it's like the attitude. Sometimes I might be not 100% with the decision, but now I'm okay with it. Maybe I'm have the feeling in brackets I'm losing something, but I know the rule is the next time I'm fine with it, and it's my decision, and the others have to accept it. So that it's this certainty of the rules. Sometimes it's okay, sometimes it's fine for me, but at the end, it comes fine for me as person and for the society. It's something really, really special for the Swiss.
And I think it's people understand that, yes, you have left and right, but the majority of people are somewhere in the center, either left of center, right of center, or in the center. And so, yes, you have some votes which will swing to the right, some votes will swing to the left. But because the government is stable and doesn't swing to left and right, you don't have this flip-flopping that you have in other countries. So the government is stable, and so the people themselves can make decisions slightly to the right, slightly to the left. And yes, maybe you won't agree with this one, but it's never a fait accompli. If you really, really disagree with it, you can collect signatures and force another vote. It's not like Brexit or like decisions in the States that are taken by one person, by presidential decree. You can't overturn them. In Switzerland, you can try and overturn anything. You might not win, but you never have that right taken away from you. So you always feel your voice could be listened to or is listened to. And so if you want to be involved, you can be involved. Maybe you don't vote. Maybe you only vote when it's something that affects you, but you know that you are involved. And I think that feeling is almost unique to Switzerland these days, because the political system in other countries, and I studied politics in the UK, it is becoming more and more alienating and more polarizing in Britain and in Germany and in the States. And The answer to that, I think, is to try and be more inclusive. It means politicians giving up their power, essentially, because, yes, politicians take decisions, parliament takes decisions in Switzerland. 80% of laws are passed without any referendum. Otherwise, the system would grind to a halt. But the people and the politicians know that option is always there. And so the search for consensus is more important than the search for confrontation.
Yeah. A very good explanation for Swissness. And as you said, other people have other opinions about Swissness. But Daiken, thank you very much for your time, your British perspective, and your expertise on the Swissness, on Swiss and living and working here. Thanks.
You're most welcome.
And I would like to say welcome to you following the English podcast, the first one. And it's very, very important for the podcast to have a feedback from your side. Listen to the podcast, tell friends or colleagues about it, and leaving a recommendation. Because the more people listen, the more people giving a recommendation, the easier it is for me to have experts invited to a podcast, because they spend their time and knowledge. It's for free for you. So I leave you the links for the website from Daiken for his books, and leave you the links for giving a recommendation on Spotify or Apple Podcast, wherever you want, to support the podcast and future guests. Keep your health. All the best from my side. I say goodbye, Martin Werner.